The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 4, text number 38, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasatikari, recorded on December 24th, 2017, in Melbourne, Australia.
So welcome everyone today to the Hare Krishna program. We love you. We're so happy you're here today. Thank you for coming. Tonight we're going to study a wonderful verse from the ancient wisdom of Bhagavad Gita. Even though this knowledge is very ancient, it's actually most relevant knowledge. And actually, this is timeless knowledge because it goes beyond time, place, and circumstance. This is called absolute truth. There are certain things that are true in one place, they're not true in another place. But this is called absolute truth because it's true in all times, all places, and all circumstances. If you can learn to resonate with it, to understand it, imbibe it, and live in terms of it, you become a spiritually enlightened being, completely free of anxiety. So it's a very valuable knowledge here. And actually, it's more valuable than what you get at Harvard University or Oxford or any of the big universities. This is the highest knowledge. Krishna calls this in the Gita, he says, Rajavidya. This is the king of education. Raja Vidya Raja Guyam Pavitam Idamuttamam Prachaksharma Gyavam Darnyam Shushakam Katamam Yayam. He says, this knowledge is the king of education. It's the most secret of all secrets, and because it gives direct knowledge of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion, and it is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed. So this is very important. Please give me your undivided attention. Focus very intensely on this knowledge, and I guarantee you will be blessed and uplifted in your existence if you do so. So tonight we're reading from the fourth chapter, which is called Transcendental Knowledge, and it is text number 38. Nahi jnanena sadrisham pradittam eha vidyate tat svayam yoga sansiddha kalenat mani vindati. In this world, there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism, and one who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. And now, wonderful words of explanation from our beloved founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada. It is called the purport, or the inner meaning, you see. When we speak of transcendental knowledge, we do so in terms of spiritual understanding. As such, there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Ignorance is the cause of our bondage, and knowledge is the cause of our liberation. This knowledge is the mature fruit of devotional service, and when one is situated in transcendental knowledge, he need not search for peace elsewhere, he enjoys peace within himself. In other words, this knowledge and peace culminate in Krishna consciousness. That is the last word in the Bhagavad Gita. So there's a lot of words here being used by our Srila Prabhupada. He's talking about liberation and bondage. What does that mean, liberation and bondage? Well, at the present moment, we are caught up in what's called karma chakra, the wheel of birth and death. This is called bondage, you see. This is taught by all the great teachers. Buddha also taught this, you see. You engage in one action, and you get a reaction. Then you another, when that reaction comes, you act in terms of that reaction, create another reaction, and it just goes on and on perpetually. So the key is you have to stop acting on the material plane and learn how to act spiritually. Don't act in a material way which binds you to a karmic reaction. If you learn how to think, speak, and act in a way which is not material but is spiritual, then you don't get a reaction, is it? So that's the key. our tendency in material life is to be self-centered, egotistical. You see? Any sort of actions or thoughts or words that are egotistical then bring a material reaction. So, from the Bhagavad Gita, from the bona fide spiritual master who represents the teachings of the Gita, we learn how to speak, think, and act in such a way that doesn't give any material reaction. In Sanskrit, it's very simple. Karma means action. An act that brings a reaction. That's called karma, you see. But there's another word in Sanskrit, akarma. The prefix a means not. So if you can learn how to speak, act, and think in a way which is akarmic, you see, then there's no reaction. So this is what you learn from a bona fide spiritual master. How to become, how to develop an akarmic mindset. So you don't create any more reactions. And when you do that, so that then opens the door for liberation. Karma means bondage. Akarma means liberation. So then how do you do that? Well, it's very simple. As long as we're acting in a self-centered way, that I'm the center of reality and everything is for my pleasure, then you're creating karma. But when you understand that actually I'm not the center of the universe, you see. I'm not the center of existence. I'm a part of it, but I'm not the center of it, you see. And you learn how to then connect your thoughts, words, and deeds with that which is the actual center of existence. Or we say God, you know, or Bhagavan in Hindi, you see. Or Ishvar. So when you learn how to then dovetail your thoughts, words, and deeds for the pleasure of the Supreme Being, that's called akarma. Now the difficulty is that many philosophers say there is no God. And we become a little confused sometimes, thinking, well, I can't really see him, so how do I know he really exists, you see? Especially in the Western world, you see, this atheism is very popular philosophy. Of course, in India, or even in India, they have atheists. Like, what was his name? Charvak. Who was that famous atheist in India? Remember his name? Yeah. So even in India, we have atheists. But in the Western countries, especially like here in Australia, or I'm from the U.S., Europe especially, you see. Atheism is very prominent. And even people who come to the temple here and chant Hare Krishna, they sometimes get bewildered by hearing this atheistic philosophy. So we need to have a very strong scientific understanding of the existence of God. This is a foundation for taking up this process. It's very important. Especially our kids growing up here in the Western countries, you see. They're exposed to this atheism. And so how to actually understand, you know, is there a God, is there not a God? It's a very important thing we understand why, how it is that God must exist scientifically and logically. It's very important. Religious faith is losing prominence in the world, and this scientific, logical thing is becoming more and more prominent all the time. So those of us who have religious faith, we have to make that also scientific and logical. So we can pass it on to our kids and their kids, and we can keep our connection with God, you see. So it's important to have a scientific understanding of God. Logical, scientific understanding. So there's a famous scientist in the UK, is very famous and very much respected and honored all over the world. He's an atheist. He says everything comes out of nothing. His name is Dr. Stephen Hawking. He says everything comes out of nothing. But what does science mean? If you've taken a science course, just like I took chemistry when I was in high school. So what did we do? The teacher said H2O equals water, and we went to the laboratory and we did it. You see? Did you do that too? Yeah, I went to the lab. We took two parts of hydrogen, one part of oxygen, and what did I get? Water, you see. We did an experiment to prove the theory, you see. If you can't do an experiment to prove the theory, then how do you know it's really true, you see? Science means you can prove the authenticity of the theory by experiment and observation, you see. That's what real science means. But if someone says, well, I'm a PhD, and I say everything came out of nothing, they're asking us to have blind faith. They criticize us religionists for having blind faith. But they're the ones who are asking for blind faith. Everything comes out of nothing. You must believe it because I say so. You see? Everything came out of nothing. But show me even one thing you can get out of nothing. I can show you a million things that come out of things. Like this body came out of my mother's womb. You see? This bottle came out of the Mount Franklin Company's manufacturing plant, you know. I mean, I can show you a million things that came out of things. Show me one thing that came out of nothing. Can you do that, Dr. Hawkins? You can show me even one thing that came out of nothing? So what is this rubbish you want me to believe? Everything came out of nothing. Well, you can't even show me one thing that came out of nothing, you see. So in this way, we have to understand this atheistic philosophy that everything came out of nothing is absurd. It has no logical foundation. It's based on blind faith. It's dogmatism. We are not dogmatic here in Krishna consciousness movement. We are godmatic, you see. We can prove scientifically and logically there must be God, you see. Just like our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, he said, every machine has an operator. It's like all the cars going up down the street. There's a driver, you see. Or my recorder here, I turned it on, you see. Every machine has an operator. And if it turns on automatically, somebody programmed it to do that. So actually there's still an operator, you see. So since we can see this universe or this cosmos in which we're situated, it functions just like a machine. So if every machine that we experience has an operator, it's the most logical thing to assume is that this universal machine has an operator, you see? So you can call him Ishvar, you can call him God or Bhagavan. We understand the concept there must be a supreme operator of the universe. You see? So in this way we have to understand there is a supreme being. Here, another argument is this. It's like there's many courts here in Australia, different courts. You have many, many courts here. Let me ask you, Aussies here, how many Supreme Courts do you have? How many? One. Huh? Supreme Court means one, isn't it? If you have more than one, it's not Supreme Court anymore.
It's one concept.
Huh? It's only one Supreme Court.
One concept, yeah. It's got a lot.
What is he saying? I'm a little deaf, so somebody can help me.
A lot of buildings.
We're talking about not the building, but the actual judges who sit and pass judgment. Not the building itself. There may be many buildings, but there's only one actually body of persons that constitute the Supreme Court. So if there's more than one court, you can't have more than one Supreme Court. Then it's not Supreme Court anymore, you see. So there's another philosophy that it's called impersonalism or Mayavadi philosophy. I'm God, you're God, we're all God. When I first went to India as a young brahmachari, somebody in the Delhi airport, they said, he came up to me, he said, we are all Krishna here. I'm Krishna, especially my little baby, he is Krishna, you see. My cute little baby boy, he's Krishna. So this is another philosophy. I'm Krishna, you're Krishna, we're all Krishna. You know. But that's like saying every court is the Supreme Court. You see. Krishna is is described in the Vedic one without a second. You see, there cannot be many Krishnas. There's one Supreme Person, Krishna, from whom everything has come. You see. So we can understand logically there has to be a Supreme Being. And now then, of course, then the question is, someone says, well, I say, there's a different opinion. Who is the Supreme Being then? That's the next question. Who is the Supreme Being? Well, Krishna has clearly revealed to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita by showing the universal form. Anybody who claims to be the Supreme Being has to manifest his universal form. You see? And make it visible for you. Someone may say, well, I'm the Supreme and here's my universal form. Can't you see it? What's your problem? Don't you see my Virat Rupa? I'm manifesting it now. You see? No. The Supreme Being makes it visible to you. You see? The Mohu is actually the Supreme. He manifests the universal form. He can show the whole universe is existing within him. You can see it. The one who is actually God, he can show you everything past, present, and future all at one time, happening everywhere. Right at that moment, and it's very scary actually. Arjuna was freaked out. He said, let me see your original form. That's all right, I've had enough of this. You see. So, but one who is actually God, he can reveal the Virat Rupa, you see. I remember, I forget who it was, but somebody wanted to convince me that it was God, and he said, just look into my eyes. But God is not some cheap thing like that. You see? God is that person who actually controls everything. He owns everything. Bhaktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam gatanam shantamrichtati. That person who owns everything, enjoys everything, and is the best friend of all living beings, that is God, Krishna reveals. So we really need to understand God scientifically, and our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, he has done such an expert job. Prabhupada is the most powerful guru you can ever imagine. He is giving scientific knowledge of God so that any person, even an atheist, can understand the existence of God, you see. Even a Westerner like me, growing up in the Christian church, you see, can understand God, you see. So it's very, very powerful knowledge. And it's so poetic and beautiful what Krishna says. There's nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. What's so great about it, you may say? Some may think, well, a nice mango milkshake is very sublime. It seems, I think the most sublime thing is a nice mango milkshake, you know. But Krishna says, no. Transcendental knowledge is the most sublime of all things. Nothing so sublime as transcendental knowledge. And nothing so pure. So what is transcendental knowledge anyway? That's the next question. Transcendental knowledge is that knowledge which is beyond time and space, which is always true in all times, all places. There's relative knowledge. Like, you know, how old are you? Well, I'm 25. That's relative. It's not accidental. It's not transcendental knowledge. It's relative knowledge. You see, right now you're 25 years old. Next year you'll be 26. But transcendental knowledge is true in all times, all places, and all circumstances. It's absolute truth. There's relative truth, and there's absolute truth. So transcendental knowledge means that which is absolutely true. And the Vedic injunction is the Tato Brahma Jigyasa. Brahma means the absolute truth. And now you have a human form, you are meant to inquire about the absolute truth. Now I wasn't trained that when I was a kid, you see. I missed that training when I was a kid. My mother and father did not train me. My dear son, now you have a human body, you must inquire about the absolute truth. I never got that training, and I was very miserable, actually. I was a very depressed young boy. My dad said, "Son, your college days are going to be the happiest days of your whole life." The day he dropped me off in the dorm at Austin College in Sherman, Texas, I was the most miserable person in the whole world. But my question, there I was going to all these courses. We were studying the great Western philosophers with all their crazy philosophies. But I had one question: what is the purpose of my existence? And nobody answered that question. So finally, when I got to the university, I started thinking like that. Because before that, I was just in the cradle, you know. You go to high school, you make good grades, you know, you join the debate squad, or you do this, and you do all the things and get your status in the high school, you know. But when you actually go out to college, now I'm on my own and going out into the world to be on my own. What is this all about? I didn't know. There was no understanding. So it was a whole soul-searching thing, and none of the professors ever answered that question. And we studied all the great philosophers in Western history, beginning from what they called the cradle of modern civilization, namely what is now called Iraq. Can you imagine? That's what they taught us was the cradle of our civilization, Iraq. They didn't teach us about India, how Maharaj Pariksit ruled the whole world from Hastinapur. That was just some mythology, you see. But it all began at the Tigris and Euphrates, which is now Iraq. That's what we were taught, you know. And then the Greeks, the Romans, the existentialist philosophers, Bertrand Russell, all this stuff. But there was no answer. What is the purpose of existence? Why are we even here? What's the purpose of being here? Nothing. It was so depressing, you see. But one day in my junior year of college, somebody in the break room told me about self-realization. And that opened up a whole new world for me. You see, I heard about self-realization. You can become self-realized. I found out there was yogis in India who achieved exalted states of enlightenment, you see. So then that opened a whole new world for me, you see. A whole mystical world opened up. Instead of making money and getting a career, my career path was self-realization. You see. It took me about, I was about 68. It took me about 3 years, but I finally achieved it by the grace of Prabhupada. I understood I'm the eternal servant of Krishna, you see. That's self-realization. When you can understand Jivara Sarupa Hoy, Krishnera Nityadas, I am the eternal servant of Krishna. You've just achieved the first stage of self-realization. You've achieved self-realization. Anyone here in this room who knows that I'm the eternal servant of Krishna, you're already self-realized. There's different steps of it, but that's the first step. You're on the beginning stage of self-realization, you see. And then when you actually learn how to do it, you know, how to manifest it with your every thought, word, and deed in all times, places, and circumstances, then you've achieved the perfection of self-realization. But even if you understand the first thing, I'm not this body, I'm the eternal servant of God. You're self-realized. You're self-realized. Now you just have to mature your self-realization, you see. You have to make it mature. So this verse is very powerful and encouraging to us. Such knowledge, knowing that I'm the eternal servant of Krishna, is the mature fruit of all mysticism. Now, there's many yogis and transcendentalists, they do all kinds of austerities, but they still haven't realized they're an eternal servant of Krishna. You see? They haven't tasted, they're doing mysticism, but they have not tasted the fruit of it yet. But just by coming here to ISKCON, where Prabhupada is the powerful guru, you see, just by hearing Prabhupada's teachings, by reading his books or hearing from his followers these teachings, just by the sheer mysticism of getting in your car and driving here to the Hare Krishna temple, you can achieve the mature fruit of mysticism just by being here and hearing it and understanding and accepting it. without having to stand on your head or do pranayama for, you know, for 50 years of pranayama or anything. Just by coming here and hearing from a self-realized person, that you can, and accepting it, understanding it, you become self-realized immediately. You see. So, and then the next of the verses, and one who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service. That's what I was talking about, you see. Enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. So the first step is you realize, I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. There must be a God, because existence can't pop out of nothing. It's absurd that things don't come out of nothing. So there has to be an original source. Krishna reveals that he's that source. Arjuna confirmed it by his own experience of the Virat Rupa, that Krishna is indeed the source of everything. Even the other forms like Ram, Nrsimha, Vamana, they all emanate from Krishna, according to the Vedic wisdom. So you can actually have your personal experience. You can see Krishna directly with your own purified eyes and see how you can also experience how everything is coming out of Krishna. You can get to the point where you can look at the deity and see Krishna in his original form, a living, breathing person standing on the altar, not just a statue. It's a matter of mature vision. So, when you actually, when you understand it and then you start to apply it, how do you do it? Well, you chant, you chant in the kirtan, you take the shad, you take the darshan, you learn how to engage in devotional activities, you see. And the second half then talks about it. One who's become accomplished in the practice of devotional service, you see. That means you learn how to do bhakti. Bhakti has 9 aspects. It's called Navavidha Bhakti. The first thing is you hear, just like you're all around, you're engaged in bhakti by hearing. You see. And then there'll be a kirtan, you can chant in the kirtan. That's the second thing. You hear, you chant, and then you remember. You can think, oh, that was such a nice lecture, such a nice kirtan, or I remember how Krishna lifted the Govardhan Hill. You can remember different things. You recall them and meditate them in your mind. That's called remembrance, you see. Shavanam kirtanam, that's called smadanam in the Sanskrit language. So then there's offering prayers. You can say, my dear Lord Krishna, please bless me that I can be your pure devotee. Or Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That's also a prayer. You're begging Krishna and Radharani, who we address as Hare, to bless us with pure devotional service. So this is called prayer. So there's actually 9 processes of bhakti. And if you start taking up these processes, which you'll learn from reading Prabhupada's books, you'll learn from our spiritual masters. Just like I have disciples. I have quite a few disciples here. My wife and I, she's sitting here. We travel all over the world. I'm one of the gurus of ISKCON. I have some disciples here. So I come here twice a year just to see that my disciples are progressing very nicely. And the many gurus we have who are preaching on behalf of Prabhupada, they do just what I'm doing. You see, they come here. They attract disciples. They train their disciples. So what we're doing here is teaching. And also your local leader, Aniruddha Prabhu, he's doing the same work as a spiritual teacher. So, and the other devotees here, we have many senior devotees who are acting as teachers. So we teach you how to actually engage in devotional service. So by this engagement in devotional service, gradually you become expert at it. You see? Just like anything. It's like if you want to, if you want to drive a car, you take some driving lessons. In the beginning, you're a little nervous. You kind of have a hard time. But after a while, you become an expert driver, you see. So anything you do, if you practice it in due course, you will become expert. So the same thing with devotional service. Whether you're playing the guitar or you're driving a car or flying an airplane, anything you do, if you practice it, you practice it seriously for perfecting it, you will become expert gradually. So the same thing with devotional service. It's a practice. And then it says, one who's become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. What does that mean, enjoying knowledge? You ever thought about enjoying knowledge? We don't usually think about that. Well, I enjoyed a trip to the beach. You know, I enjoyed a nice strawberry lassi, or, you know, I enjoyed enjoying knowledge. Did we ever hear about enjoying knowledge in school? They ever teach us to enjoy knowledge? That's something quite unique and different. Enjoying knowledge. Well, how can you enjoy knowledge? Knowledge in school, we think, well, I just have to learn this so I can pass the exam, so I can get the grades, so I can get a job. I don't really enjoy it, but I have to do it. It's an austerity, you see. That's mundane knowledge, you see. But spiritual knowledge is different. Spiritual knowledge is mystical. Spiritual knowledge opens you up to a whole other channel of existence. Like, of course, we don't watch TV, but maybe some of you do, but I don't. There's many channels on the TV, you see. Of course, I used to watch when I was a kid. I didn't know any better. Watching the Mickey Mouse Club and Roy Rogers. But you flip the channels around, you see. So it's just an example. The thing is, you can flip the channel of your own consciousness. Transcendental knowledge enables you to tune into a channel of consciousness, which is unbelievably sublime. This is my point. The normal channel we have is called birth, death, old age, and disease, you know. You get born, you get sick. As you're growing up, you get sick. You have to go to school. You don't want to school. Finally, if you get a job, you don't want to get a job. And you, all these things, it's just an austerity. And then finally, after all these years of dedicated service, your body gets so old, it's even hard to stand up anymore. You got to go in a wheelchair. And finally, you just leave the body, you know, and you go, ah. So that's not a very nice channel, really. Transcendental knowledge will take you to a different dimension of consciousness, to where you're actually transcendental to your material body, when you actually feel to be an eternal youth who can never be pinched by any disturbance of this material world. Even death is nothing for you. You see? It's just moving from one room to another. You see? So this is what transcendental knowledge is all about. It takes you to another dimension of consciousness, a dimension of bliss and knowledge in eternality. It's in Sanskrit, it's called Satchidananda, you see. And enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. The Sanskrit is Kalena. Kalena. Kala means time, so Kalena means in time, or within time, you see. So it's not instant. Of course, it can be. There are examples of persons who achieved instant nirvana, instant spiritual enlightenment. It could happen. Generally, it takes time, you see. But there was actually one king. His name was Katvangamara. This is in the Vedic age. Very, very powerful kshatriya. He was so powerful, you couldn't believe how powerful he was. He was also a very pious and godly man. But the devatas and the higher planets, sometimes the higher planets are attacked by the asuras. The heavenly kingdom was being overrun by the asuras. And it was a very horrible situation. But Maharaj Katvanga was so powerful, even though he was an earthly king. The devatas and the higher planets asked him to come to the heavenly planets to defeat the demons, and he did it. He was so powerful. For many years he fought very valiantly, leading the whole counterattack, and he drove these demons out of the heavenly kingdom. And then the demigods who can give boons, they said, "Oh, Maharaj Katvanga, we're so pleased with you. We can never thank you enough. Just any boon you like, please tell us what boon we can give you." And he said, he was so enlightened king. He said, they're called Rajarsi. They are Raja and Rishi at the same time. Rajarsi. He was Rajarsi. He said, just tell me when I'm going to die. That's all I want to know. They said, oh, they could see these things. The demigods have the powers to see this. They said, oh, your death is just now coming. He said, thank you very much. He took shelter of Krishna, got instant nirvana, you see. So it's possible. Although generally it's in the course of time. But here's the thing. The more serious you are, the faster it comes. You're achieving a nirvana or spiritual enlightenment. It's up to you. You want to have it in 100 lifetimes? Or in this lifetime? You want to wait till you're 80 years old, or you like to have it when you're 18 years old? You know what I'm saying? According to your desire. If you intensely desire nirvana or spiritual enlightenment, That word is actually there in the Gita, Paramam Nirvanam. Krishna says the supreme nirvana that abides in me. So how soon do you want spiritual enlightenment? How intense are you to get it? Is material education more important? Is making money more important? Well, it'll be a while before you get it. But if you understand that becoming spiritually perfect is the number one goal of my life, the other things I also do, I need some money to maintain my house, my family, that's okay. But you have to understand those things are less important than spiritual enlightenment. But here's the really cool thing about it. So we have many necessities, material also. But Krishna says, for those who worship me with exclusive devotion, what's the Sanskrit? Meditating my transcendental form. I preserve what they have and I carry by their legs. Ananyaschintayanto mang yejana paryapasate tesham nichapayuktanam yogachemam vaham yaham. For those who worship me with exclusive devotion, what does that mean? Exclusive devotion. All of my love is, I channel all of my love to God, you see, to Krishna. I preserve what they have and I carry what they lack. You may say, well, what about my wife and my kids and my grandmother and my brothers and my country and my cat, or some people have a cat or a dog. What about them? Well, here's the mystical thing about this. When you water the root of the tree, all the leaves and branches are nourished. When you give every bit of your love to Krishna or God, then you become the best lover of your wife, the best lover of your husband, the best lover of your kids, the best lover of everyone. I just got on my Facebook page, I just noticed my brother had posted about some, he's not a devotee, but some stray cat appeared at his door. And the cat was very paranoid, and they took the cat in, and the cat was very scared, you couldn't even pet it. And finally now the cat is mellowed out and just, you know, puts her head in your lap. So somebody was saying how wonderful it was, how wonderful it is when you give your love to a cat. So I replied on Facebook. I said, yes, it is very wonderful, but it's even more wonderful when you give your love to God. You see, they're very fond of giving love to a dog or a cat. But when you actually give your love to Krishna, that exceeds giving love to anyone else, because when Krishna is the root of all existence, when I give my love to Krishna, then I'm giving, when I love Krishna perfectly, I'm loving you personally perfectly also, even though I don't even know your name. And I've never met you until today here in this class. I'm loving you personally, I'm loving you perfectly also. You understand this point? When I give my love to Krishna, now I'm loving you perfectly and unlimitedly, with no conditions. You see, in the material world, our love is always conditional. I'll scratch your back if you'll scratch my back. Conditional love. That's not love, that's lust. Masquerading as love. But real love is no conditions. I unconditionally love you because I want to benefit you and serve your highest self-interest for all of eternity. That's true love, you see. And when you give your love to Krishna, then you can love every living entity in that pure way. So many times we hear about universal love. Krishna consciousness is the perfection of universal love. So we have about 12 minutes left. I think there's an RT. It must be an RT at 6. There's no RT. But I was told we go till 6 o'clock.
It's 7 o'clock.
Are you kidding? An hour, 2 hour lecture?
The RT is at 7 o'clock, so there's no RT now.
Oh.
There's japa at 6 o'clock.
Oh, so there's a japa at 6 o'clock. Anyway, so I was told to speak until 6. And I didn't really want to go over it because I had a lot of work to do, and like a lot of writing to do upstairs. So are there any questions? Are there any challenges? Maybe some of you think that they're not really sure that God exists. We can talk about them. You see, maybe God doesn't really exist, or maybe we're all God. I mean, does anybody feel I stated something wrong? I'm speaking according to what I've heard from my spiritual master and what I've realized from my own experience of 43 years of bhakti. But if you feel I've made some mistake, I've said something that's incorrect, please point it out to me. I'm always trying to learn, become more expert in my knowledge. If I said something that's not correct, please correct me. And But if there's any questions, I'll be happy to try to answer them. Anyone have any questions? There's no corrections? Okay. No questions? Here's a question. What is it? You raised your hand. You're just scratching? Okay. So there's no questions. I'll go ahead and speak a little more about this wonderful knowledge here. Prabhupada says, when we speak of transcendental knowledge, we do so in terms of spiritual understanding. Ignorance is the cause of bondage, and knowledge is the cause of liberation. This is the thing I really like it. This knowledge is the mature fruit of devotional service, and when one is situated in transcendental knowledge, he need not search for peace elsewhere, for he enjoys peace within himself. So here's the really cool thing about it, because everybody has different levels of material success. And everybody wants, generally we think, I have to be happy, I need to get a higher level of material success. You know, a better job, better pay, better house, better car, you know, this is the normal concept. To really be happy, I have to be progressing materially. Otherwise, if I'm regressing materially, then I'll be really miserable. But if I'm progressing materially, then I'll be happy. You see, this is a false concept. Because no matter, even if you go all the way to becoming Brahma, the chief demigod, you can. Brahma is an open position. By pious activities, you can become Brahmaji, the chief demigod of the whole universe, the highest position in this whole universe. But even Brahmaji, if he's not a pure devotee of Krishna, he's miserable. Wow, even Brahmaji can be miserable? He's got the highest position, even Brahmaji can be miserable? Yes. So, the point is, make whatever arrangements you need to live comfortably. That's your quota. You don't have to live on the street like a beggar, we'll work for food. You see? You can live comfortably. That's your quota given by God. You can live comfortably. So, make arrangements for comfortable living, but don't go after extravagant living, you see. Live comfortably, but not extravagantly. And with the balanced energy of not going after extravagance and just being satisfied with your basic comforts, you see, then take that balanced energy you still have and utilize it for self-realization, you see, to advance yourself spiritually. To understand this knowledge, study the Gita regularly. Follow the instructions of the Gita. Like Krishna says, satatam kirtayantam mam. We're going to have a japa session in a few minutes, you see. This is following the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, you should chant my names. That's Krishna's statement in Gita. You should always chant my names 24 hours, so at least one day a week you can chant the names, you see. Satatam kirtayantam mam. Always chant my names, you see. So if you actually start applying the Gita, then you'll experience the awakening of transcendental knowledge within your heart. And it won't depend on any material situation. You can be young, you can be old, you can be rich, you can be famous, you can be poor, you can be unknown. It doesn't matter your material situation. If you awaken Krishna consciousness, you will achieve a state of unlimited happiness. My wife was reminding me the other day of a story of some poor brahmana. He was just living under the tree. And he was a great devotee. The king heard about it, and he came and offered all kinds of opulences. If I missed something, you can tell me. He offered this poor Brahmin all kinds of opulences. He wasn't even interested. He said, my wife and I live under this tree, and we make some tea from the tamarind pulp, and we live very comfortably here. We don't need anything else, you see. The Brahmana wasn't interested in material progress. He was very happy living simply under the tree. So, we don't say you have to live under a tree. But the point is, you should learn whatever quota has been given to you by your previous karma, just be satisfied with them. And cultivate the awakening of love of God within your heart. That will bring you liberation from the cycle of birth and death. It will bring you great happiness and satisfaction. It will put your kids in the best possible situation. Your duty for your children is to liberate them from birth and death, not just to give them material education. If you simply situate them material education, if not spiritually educated them, you're actually committing violence on your kids. Your duty is to give them, the material thing is good. That's good. But better than that, you give them the knowledge of how to get out of birth and death. That's your prime duty. A father is meant to be the guru. The mother is meant to be the guru of the kids. You have to be guru or spiritual teacher for your children. Not just, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. My father taught me algebra when I was in the 6th grade. And that was all right. But he should have taught me. But he didn't know how to teach me about perfecting my relationship with love. Of course, it wasn't his fault because his parents didn't teach him either. So I don't blame him. But I'm saying I wouldn't have been depressed when I went to college if he could have taught me, you see, of how to perfect my relationship with God. Because he didn't teach me, I was very depressed when I went to college. So it's your duty as parents, you have to become spiritually enlightened. And you have to train your children properly. Any questions? Any announcements? Here's the question.
How was Shiva Bibindad?
How much?
How was Shiva Bibindad even if he is a great devotee?
What did you hear? Can you understand what she's... What is he saying? I'm a little deaf, so please help me. What did he say? How to become a better devotee?
He's saying how did Lord Shiva become the bewildered even if he's a devotee?
How did he become the best of all devotees?
How did Lord Shiva become bewildered?
Bewildered? Well, that's some pastime, actually. Actually, Lord Shiva is not... These are all different leelas that teach us. We can learn by his bewilderment. Lord Shiva was desiring to see Krishna in his form. Krishna has a female form also, Mahini Murti. Krishna has that form, so he was very curious to see that form. Lord Shiva is known as one who has perfect control of his senses. But when he saw Mahini Murti, he completely lost control. He couldn't control himself. So that's a good lesson for us, you see. Yes? To implement Krishna consciousness. Well, the thing is, you get up in the morning. You should have an arati ceremony for the whole family. You see, there should be an arati ceremony. You can get a picture of Radha and Krishna. You have a Prabhupada picture also is very good. You have the Panchatattva picture, and you have an art. Offer some incense and a flower, and get a chamara and fan them. Do a simple arati every morning and have a kirtan, Hare Krishna kirtan. The whole family should have a little arati every day before breakfast. That's a very important thing. That will actually very much elevate the whole... It will take the house into the spiritual world. Your home will be in the spiritual world if you do an arati every day. It will transform your house. The whole family come together for arati every morning before breakfast. Definitely. And in the evening also. Before going to bed, before dinner or after dinner, you see, there'll be an arti ceremony. Arti in the beginning and arti in the end. The whole day it's called the sandwich program. Arti in the beginning, arti in the end. Now you're sandwiched, the whole day is sandwiched within Krishna consciousness.
He's asking for five.
Yeah?
He's asking for five steps.
Five?
Five steps.
Any five things.
Well, you should offer all the food. We got two artis so far. Now we need three more things. All the food should be offered to Krishna on your altar. You don't eat food that's not offered. That's called pap or sin. Krishna says in the Gita, devotees are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which has been offered first for sacrifice, and others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment rarely eat only sin. So whatever you eat, you should make a nice... You have a special plate a very nice, beautiful plate that's for Krishna, you see. Whatever you eat, every prep, of course, when there's no onions and garlic or meat, fish, or eggs in a Vaishnava diet. But you put all your eatables, you put them in the plate for Krishna, and then you go serve him first. And you bow down and you say some prayers, chanting Hare Krishna, asking Krishna to accept the offering. So then you have the artis, and then you also, in the home, there's a policy, only prasadam. So the children may ask, Mommy, did you offer that to Krishna? The children can check the parents to make sure that your parents are doing okay. Mommy and Daddy, is this offered yet? Oh, we forgot to offer it. Oh, then we must offer it, Mommy and Daddy. The children can also be like policemen to make sure that the food's being offered, you see. Huh? All right, so we got three things. Now we can japa. Everyone can chant some japa. And then also read from Bhagavad Gita. There's the five things. Two artis, offer all the food, chant japa, and read Gita. Those things should be standard. And also Krishna book is nice in the evening. Krishna book, nice stories of Krishna. Bedtime stories, we say. you can read Krishna book stories to the kids when you put in a bed at night. Read one story and then go to bed and dream about Krishna, you see. So there's the five items, and it's now 6 o'clock. And now we thank you very much for coming to our program. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Thank you very much. Now we have prasadam for everyone. You can come forward and we'll give you some prasad. And then after that, we'll have the japa session.